Okay, so last weekend there was the biggest fundraiser for Donald Trump that ever happened in American history. This was not just a massive political fundraiser where, you make, I don't know, get $10 million in fundraising funds. No, this fundraiser brought in $50.5 million for Donald Trump's campaign. 50.5 million. Now that's a huge amount of money. That beat Joe Biden's record. So around April 1, I think it was the weekend of April 1st. Not the weekend of April 1st. Weekend of March 31st, I believe it was. Joe Biden fundraised in Pennsylvania, I believe it was, with Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and obviously himself. He brought in about 20-ish, 25-ish million dollars. And that was the biggest numbers ever recorded in American history. That's a massive number. It really is. And it's honestly, they kind of made fun of Donald Trump after doing it. They said, hey, you're never going to see Donald Trump and George Bush in the same room. You're never going to see Donald Trump or any other historical Republican in the same room, mostly because all of them except for George Bush are dead. So there's that reason. But you're never going to see them fundraising together either. Donald Trump can never make more money than what we just made tonight. That was what they were saying. Well, Donald Trump just proved them all wrong. He just brought in $50.5 million with the largest fundraiser in American history. So I got a little interested when I saw this on the news. I mean, this is everywhere. Donald Trump made $50.5 million. And I'm going to be honest with you, I was a little late to the news. So I have a really funny story. So I'm in college, obviously, and I left my phone at college one time. So I was a little late on the news. I didn't see that he got that massive fundraiser because I wasn't looking at my phone. I wasn't looking at the news. So, yeah. But I've caught up with the news now, so that's good. And I got really interested. Who was hosting this fundraiser? Why were they hosting the fundraiser? And just how in the world do you bring in $15.5 million without any massive celebrities there other than yourself and without any specialized bands or presidential candidates from times past or anything like that? How do you bring in that much money? Because that's such a large amount of money. I think the average person doesn't understand just how much money that really is. So let me put it into a bit of a perspective. In 2020, both Donald Trump and Joe Biden spent over $1 billion on their presidential campaigns. Now, 50 million is about 5%, not 5%, it's about 20% of a billion. So that's not very much money. And okay, yeah, you're right. But that's because closer to November, each candidate starts making a whole bunch more money from donations, not individual fundraisers. And so that brings them over the 1 billion mark. And also, Trump's a billionaire, so he can spend some of his own money on his campaign. So $50 million, that's a lot, especially in April for a campaign. That not only breaks every single campaign record recorded, but that's massive. That closes the fundraising gap. So before this fundraiser, Joe Biden had about $180 million for cash on hand, while Trump had about $90 million for cash on hand. And that was after Joe Biden's massive fundraiser with Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. Well, now Donald Trump just had a $50 million fundraiser. Now Joe Biden has $180 million cash on hand, and Donald Trump has $140 million cash on hand. The fundraising gap between the two is closing. So Democrats' attack strategy for calling Donald Trump broke isn't really working. Not only is he winning in his a lot of in a lot of his cases that are brought against him, his the amount he has to pay to the state of New York for committing fraud with his business records and whatnot has been lowered by about 75%. He just brought in $50 million in fundraisers. A lot of the election cases in Georgia were thrown out. Oh, a lot of the charges, anyway, in Georgia were thrown out. He still has a case there. It's just a lot of the charges were thrown out. I believe 32, actually. And the classified documents case isn't going anywhere. The Stormy Daniels case is going to go somewhere. He'll probably have to pay her all of that 90. I believe they appealed the ruling, but he's probably going to have to pay her that 90 million. So I guess there's that. And basically, Donald Trump isn't broke. He's winning all of these cases, except for the Stormy Daniels one, but that's minimum compared to the other cases that, compared to if he lost his other cases, $90 million is not that much. So he's actually not broke, and he's increasing his fundraising. So there's that to watch out for. So let's talk about John Paulson. John Paulson, if you didn't know, was the person who hosted this fundraiser for Donald Trump. It was in Palm Beach, Florida. It was like a dinner thing, and it was pretty cool. So John Paulson has a net worth of $3.5 billion. That's roughly about the same as Donald Trump's if you exclude Truth Social. Except John Paulson has never had a company go bankrupt. All of his companies are successful. Well, he only has one, so when I say all of them, the only one he has is successful. It's so successful he has a $3.5 billion net worth. So it's not, he's in no risk of losing all of his money. He has no criminal indictments against him. So he's not spending money on that stuff either. That's one of the things that conservatives wished. Like, we wish Donald Trump didn't have these indictments. And there's a few reasons for that why. So Vivek Ramaswamy was a self-funded political candidate. Every single money he had in his own pocket is what he used on his campaign. He had no indictments. He wasn't spending it on any lawfare or anything like that. He was spending it all on his campaign. We wish Donald Trump could do that, but he can't because he is in the middle of... How many indictments are there? There's so many different indictments. I don't keep track of them anymore. He's spending a lot of his money on his campaign. Not his campaign, his court cases. And not on his campaign. He has to sacrifice his campaign so he can spend on the court cases so that then he can look like a better president when he's elected and not in jail. Yada, yada, yada. You get the idea. John Paulson has none of that. So he's basically, John Paulson starts this massive fundraiser for him. And I'm pretty sure he donated a large sum of his own net worth to Donald Trump, which is good. And so I thought, okay, why would John Paulson be pushed to donate some of his own money to Donald Trump and host this massive fundraiser for him? What is the sort of thing going on? Because, you know, most billionaires act like they don't like Donald Trump. I don't know if they really do or not, but they act like they don't because a lot of their customers don't like Donald Trump. So what would push John Paulson to host this fundraiser? So I looked him up. He has a hedge fund managing group and a trading group in, I believe it's New York. Probably will change soon considering Trump just lost a trial in New York. So probably be in Texas soon, but he has a company and it's extremely successful. And then I saw something. So on March 13, Trump floated the idea of making John Paulson his Secretary of Treasury. That was March 13, and that was obviously before the fundraiser. So my question is, was John Paulson encouraged to fundraise for Donald Trump because he was floated as being Secretary of Treasury? I mean, this is American politics. That's probably what happened. Donald Trump says, hey, I want John Paulson to be my Secretary of Treasury, and John Paulson's like, yeah, I'm going to donate money to you now. I sure hope you keep your word. That's probably what happened, to be completely honest with you. Because this sort of stuff doesn't just fall out of the blue. I've never heard of John Paulson before. I've never seen any of his speeches. I don't even know if he does speeches. I've never seen what he does. I haven't even heard of him until today. I'm not even lying with you. I researched him today before I made this podcast. That's the first time I've heard of him. Really, it really is. So why would this random guy decide, hey, we need a fundraiser for Donald Trump? And I'm pretty sure it is because Donald Trump said he wants him to be a Secretary of Treasury. Now, John Paulson is a Republican. He has been a Republican for quite a long time. I don't know the exact date when he registered as one, but he has been one for quite a long time. He's conservative. He believes in the Republican value system and capitalism. And so it's not like he changed his belief sets. He didn't change from a liberal to a Republican just because he wants a nice government position. But he did put up this fundraiser, at least somewhat, because he might be given a treasury position. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm just fine with John Paulson getting a treasury position, because he's never been broke. He spends his money well. He has a $3.5 billion net worth. He's extremely successful. He built it from the bottom up. He was not born rich, at least not super rich. So maybe middle class, but not mega rich, you know. So a lot of his own net worth is from himself. He built it from the ground up. And that is what we need in American Treasury. So, I mean, I'm fine with him being treasurer. That's fine. I just thought it was a little interesting that he comes out of nowhere and sets up this fundraiser for Donald Trump, and it raises $15.5 million, which is good. It's good. Don't get me wrong. I'm fine with that. It's excellent. Amazing. I love that. I just thought it was weird. So there's that. The second biggest news of today is Lula da Silva. So Lula da Silva is not a good person. He really isn't. Okay. So I don't know how many of you guys pay attention to elections in other countries. I pay attention to elections everywhere in the world because it's my hobby. The whole reason why I don't study politics in college is because why would I study something that I already study? I study politics for fun. World politics, American politics, if it has the word politics in it, I study it because it's fun for me. So why would I go to college and study something that I already study in my free time? It just doesn't make any sense. That's why I'm going to college for business. Now, Lula da Silva, so I've done a lot of research on him. In 2021, he was elected as the Brazilian president. I think it was 2021. Maybe it was 2023. It doesn't matter. Either way, Lula da Silva is president of Brazil, okay? And he's not a great person. He was in prison for a while. He was then, released from prison by the Supreme Court. And then he became president. So he was literally in prison for corruption charges and then somehow got elected to the presidency. And I'm not a big fan of his opposition either. Jair Bolsonaro was the guy who ran against him and whenever he was elected. And Jair Bolsonaro was also president at one time. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. He wasn't great either. Jair Bolsonaro, I listened to an interview of him between Ben Shapiro and him. And he has a lot of capitalist type ideas, but he doesn't put them in action. So he's mostly talk and very little action. And that's unfortunate. And it might be because there's a bureaucracy slowing him down. I don't know. I just know that he doesn't do a lot of what he says he's going to do. And I know that because when he was president, that's what he did. He said a lot of stuff and didn't do much. Now, Lula da Silva says a lot of stuff and does quite a bit. And that's terrible because what Lula da Silva says is not good. So he's basically an emerging dictator. He's not dictator yet, but he will be dictator within the next few years of Brazil if he continues on this track. So free speech in Brazil is almost non-existent. On social media platforms, he is going to these companies, whether it's Facebook or Meta, they're the same thing. So whether it's Meta or Snapchat or X or any other social media company that does business in Brazil, he goes there and he says, hey, these are certain people who are in Brazil and I do not want them speaking, or I don't want any of their tweets being heard by my Brazilian people. I don't want these ideas heard by Brazilians. I don't want these people heard about by Brazilians. Nothing. I don't want any Brazilian to know about this stuff. And so they censor him. And now X is saying, no, we're no longer going to do this. We are a free speech platform. We are not going to censor Brazilians or ideas just because you don't like what they're saying or you don't like what their ideologies are. That's not how free speech works. Free speech means we will spread the freedom of information. We will not censor any of it. Any Brazilian can go to our platform and look at everything. And that's excellent. That's amazing. I like that X is doing that. And I'm really happy that Twitter was bought by Elon Musk because it's become a much better place after that. I'm not a fan of all their marketing decisions. I think rebranding it to X might not have been the best decision. And I think some of what they're doing on the platform, like changing how it looks and stuff, isn't the best decision either. But the basics of the platform with returning it to free speech ideals is excellent. I love that. And it's amazing. That's what makes it better than Twitter right now. So they're fighting against the Brazilian government because they do not believe in censorship. And because they're fighting against the Brazilian government, they have defied a court order. I'm not even joking. So they said, hey, we are no longer going to do this. And then a judge in Brazil said, you know what? No, now you're guilty. Now you have to do it. You're breaking Brazilian law. You have to censor these people. And again, X and Elon Musk are doubling down. They're saying, no, we're not going to do this. We will not censor Brazilians. We will not censor certain ideas in Brazil just because you do not like them. There are millions of Brazilians who do like those ideas, who do like those people. You, in this case, Lula da Silva, do not get to decide what those millions of people should or should not like. That is not how this works. That is not freedom of speech. That is not a free country. That is not okay. That is what X is saying. And so this hasn't gone any further. I mean, this is a developing story. This has literally just happened yesterday and today. So what can happen now, the way this is possibly going to happen, is the Brazilian Supreme Court has the ability to shut down the ex-headquarters in Brazil, shut down and kick out any ex-employees in Brazil, and completely shut down the platform within Brazil. So you'd have to use something like a VPN to go on it in Brazil. Although they'd probably block a lot of VPNs, to be completely honest with you. Now, none of that has happened yet. It's probably going to happen. It just hasn't yet. I would expect it within the next few days because Lula da Silva is an emerging dictator. Everything he's doing, I looked up Lula da Silva. When you look up Lula da Silva and you want to know what he's done in Brazil, the only results that come up are what has he done for the Amazon rainforest, or what has he done for the environment, or why is focusing on Brazilian environment better than focusing on the Brazilian economy? All of that is brainwashing. All of it. Every single little bit of it. This is brainwashing in real time. We have a dictator in charge of a nation with over 100 million people in the Western Hemisphere. This isn't Cuba with 14 million residents. This is Brazil with over 100 million residents and a dictator rising to power. He is saying, don't care about the economy because my opposition likes the economy. No, the economy is going to be bad, but that's okay because we're fixing the rainforest. And don't get me wrong, fixing the Amazon rainforest is good. But when you're saying you have to focus on the rainforest and adversely destroy the economy, but that's a good thing, that is brainwashing. That is not okay because those two things do not have to go together. You can focus on the rainforest while also increasing the Brazilian economy and cooperating with the United States more. And I looked up their foreign policy too. This is their foreign policy, and I kid you not. Instead of it being, this is a new era where America can restart relations with Brazil. No, it was, this is a new era where America can restart climate relations with Brazil. Climate. Now, if you didn't know this, Brazil was extremely socialist already. They didn't have a dictator before Da Silva, but it was close. And now they definitely are getting a dictator. This sort of climate stuff has been focused on by Brazil by the past few administrations. Even Bolsonaro focused on rebuilding the Amazon rainforest. This isn't a new thing. This isn't some sort of, this climate idea was never gone. Brazil's always focused on the climate, but now they're ignoring the economy and they're ignoring the people. And they're not even focusing on the climate. They're doing like a little bit of things here and there just to make some people happy. But they're instead, what they're really doing is they're clamping down on people's speech, people's press, people's right to protest. They're clamping down on people's basic freedoms. They're not like John Locke. The United States was based on the ideas of John Locke and Montesquieu. Brazil is based on the ideas of Voltaire and Rousseau. Voltaire and Rousseau, if you don't know who they are, that's totally fine. I don't expect you to know who they are. If you do, you're kind of a nerd. So, I mean, I'm a nerd too, so I don't blame you. But Voltaire and Rousseau were terrible philosophers from the 1700s. Voltaire believed in, the only good thing Voltaire believed in was separation of church and state. But he believed it to such an extreme extent that he actually thought religion was bad for society. And it's not. Every successful society in the history of mankind had a major religion and focused on that major religion. Its entire society was built up on that religion's morals. Every single successful society. When Rome was at its height, it was based on some sort of religious morals, whether it was ancient Greek or Christianity, early Christianity. Even Byzantium. When Byzantium reconquered what was originally the Roman Empire, they were based on Eastern Orthodoxy. They were Christian. Their entire moral system was based on Eastern Orthodoxy. The United States, the largest, most powerful empire to ever exist in mankind, was based on Christianity and still is based on Christianity, though that is decreasing today, unfortunately. Every single successful country, empire, nation has been based on some sort of religion. They've based their society on religious morals. Now, Lula da Silva is changing that in Brazil. He's trying to take religion out of Brazil. And I don't just mean saying, you know what, churches can't donate to government organizations and government organizations shouldn't donate to churches. No, I mean he's actually going against churches. Your freedom, him going against your freedom to speech and your freedom to protest and your freedom to post anything on social media, that's going against your religious ideals. If he doesn't like what you say, and you're just talking about religion, not even his government, just religion in general, he can censor you. This isn't just freedom of speech. This is all of the basic freedoms of humanity. And he's doing it for what he calls the general will. And the general will was an idea started by Rousseau in the 1700s. And you might think, oh, that's okay, because, you know, you do something for the better good of everyone. Sure, let's talk about the general will for a little bit. General will is this idea that it doesn't matter what you think. You don't get a vote. Your opinions, who cares? I really don't care what your opinions are. I'm in charge. I decide what I think is best for everyone. If I think it's best for everyone, I will implement it. And if you resist, you will die. That is Rousseau's ideas. That is what Lula da Silva is working on implementing into Brazil. This is an emerging dictator. So if you're Brazilian or you're South American, make sure you never, ever elect someone like Lula da Silva, ever. If you want to keep your democracy, you want to keep your republic, you want to keep your nation where you still have a voice, Lula da Silva is not the person to elect. On the contrary, in Argentina, we have Javier Milei. Now, Javier Milei is like the exact opposite of Lula da Silva. Instead of having every single wrong policy opinion known to mankind, he has every single correct policy opinion known to mankind. So if you're looking for an American version of Javier Milei, there isn't really one. I'll try to like combine two people to try to make it make sense. So he's got the policies of Ron DeSantis, but he talks like Donald Trump. So Donald Trump, you know, Donald Trump's not afraid of saying bad words or making fun of people or anything like that. Well, that's Javier Milei. Javier Milei is very vulgar with his language, and that's part of what makes him so energetic and ecstatic. That's why he got elected in the first place. But he also has ideas similar to Ron DeSantis's. He's very purist on what he thinks, and he believes in a free market. So in Argentina, Argentina is just so far gone at this point that any change is welcome, including Javier Milei's. And I like Javier Milei. I'll vote for him any day of the week if he was American, but he's not, unfortunately. I really wish we had some people like Javier Milei, you know, running American politics, but we don't. He's cut 70,000 government workers. He's pulled a surplus in the past few months for Argentina. Instead of going into debt, he's making money now. That's a good thing. He's cut, I believe it's 11 of the government agencies, or combined them, either cut or combined them. He's planning on cutting even more government workers. He's cut thousands of regulations. All of this is incredible. It really is. He's privatizing government industries like the air and train and oil. So what Javier Milei is doing, that's the right way to go. So if you're South American and you want to know who to elect, look up which one of your candidates is closer to Javier Milei. We need those people elected. And if you're Argentinian, or if you are an Argentine, I don't know how to say it. I don't know if it's Argentinian or Argentine, so I say them both sometimes. If you live in Argentina, re-elect Javier Milei. He's doing an excellent job. What he's doing is necessary. Your nation is so far gone, beyond the point of no return, that you actually have to tear down the government and rebuild it in order to get it back on track. It's not the ideal way to go, but it is the only way to go. And America is heading down there too. It won't be long before the United States has to tear down our own government and rebuild it in order to return to our former glory. Thank you guys for listening to the episode today. A little bit of a crazy weekend last night, you know, $15.5 million is not something to scoff at. It's quite a bit. And an emerging dictator in Brazil, if you live in Brazil, don't re-elect him. I don't even know if you'll have an election again, but don't re-elect him. Please. If you live in Argentina, though, you're doing excellent. Keep up your good work. But thank you guys for tuning in. I'll see you all later. God bless you. Adios.